on the dead man's chest. Yo, ho, ho, and a bottle of rum. Drink, and the devil have done with the rest. Yo, ho,
ho. Cow, brown cow. Are you calling me a cow?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Cow, brown cow.
You know, a little bit cold, but, you know, it's all right. All right, folks, thanks for joining us today on this special edition of Comaholics. This is a short episode, an abbreviated episode, and I say that because it's not going to be 2 hours and 20 minutes long like our traditional shows tend to go. This is going to be a little bit of a shorter show of Comaholics. I don't know, would you call this a shooter of Comaholics?
This is 16.1. This is our point one.
Right, well, here. Yeah, but I mean, if a regular episode of Comaholics is like this binge drinking drunk fest, then this is just like a couple shots
this
at the bar,
like,
Actually, one for the road. What do you call this one? One for the road.
Well, I just poured a little bit of scotch, so you know it's kind of like the mini me show. This is like the mini version. We'll call this the Comaholics Light.
Light.
Yes.
Less filling.
Well, you know, less content.
But does it still taste great? That's the question
that's
people want to know. And this is going to be a little bit weird because the program I'm using to record this conversation is going to put my voice in the left channel and your voice in the right channel.
Oh, so we're like back and forth.
Right, so we're like dueling back and forth between the headphones or the speakers or whatever people are using.
Where did you put my voice?
You would be on my side of the tease.
I didn't know how smart he was.
So it's like two against one here.
So we should probably do a little bit of an introduction or whatever if this is the first time people are listening and whatnot. I am co-host Dirt here. I am in a place that we affectionately call The Pit, which is my basement. It's where I filmed the news desk and certain other wonderful shows for the Pop Culture Network. And I am on the phone right now with Comaholics HQ. And over in the
That's
HQ,
right.
We have – who's over there in the HQ tonight?
You usually use code name here, so pick something out here.
I'm Hux.
The Hux. We got Hux visiting us from Arizona, by the way. He decided to move from the desert to the blustery
cold
west.
Yeah, you picked the perfect time of year to visit.
Yeah, exactly. So he caught up on this too, and I thought it would be appropriate. You know, it's like a Comaholics with a little banter on the side. You know, it's kind of our style. So I'm here in the HQ. It's kind of like you're calling in on the Batcave, sort of.
And who are you? You still haven't introduced yourself.
Oh, who am I? Who am I? I'm the Apocalypse, of course. Hello,
McFly.
The show.
Well, you know, there might be new people listening to this. They might be a little less intimidated with the show that isn't, you know, as long as the director's cut of Avatar. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, we did talk about how you were going to, like, knock me over on the head and replace me or just, like, do without me and just do, like, the Comaholics show.
Throw your voice.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, this is...
This is
one step in that direction. Next time I won't even call you on the phone. I'll just do the show myself.
There you go. Smart move. Smart man. So I guess we need to actually talk about the subject matter of this show. We're going to be reviewing Red Skull Incarnate.
And we're actually going to be talking about this because issue number 5 was given to us as a digital review copy from Greg Pak, the writer of the comic book series. And because I am the senior editor of iNeedComics.com, part of the Pop Culture Network, I told you it was your job to read it and there'd be a quiz later. And so here we are. This is now pop quiz time. We are going to be talking about the Red Skull series. And you actually went back and read the entire series so that issue 5 made sense. You're not just reading issue 5 out of the blue, correct?
That is correct. Well, you know, you can't just give me like the 5th issue of a 5-issue series.
Oh, I can.
Well, you did. Yes, you did, obviously. And thank you. And thank you, Marvel. What a blessing, actually, to read this, because actually I'm quite fond of this.
Well, actually, you want to thank Greg Pak, not necessarily Marvel specifically.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Well, I want to make sure I gave my kudos. But, you know, thank you, Greg. This was a pleasure to read, actually. It's funny because Red Skull at least to my recent history of being a comic book reader lover, there's not a lot of backstory to him. And in fact, until recently, Red Skull's daughter appearing in Fear Itself, there hasn't been a lot of Red Skull hoopla, so to speak, other than, you know, the most recent Captain America, obviously, was an introduction to Red Skull, you know, the mainstream pop culture. So I thought this was a neat challenge for any writer to try to overcome, filling in this backstory. But you know more of kind of the history, the lore, so to speak, of Red Skull. So kind of tell me, is there a lot of backstory to Red Skull before this, or is this kind of you know, breaking ground?
I forget how new you are to comics.
Yeah.
Red Skull's been around since the actual days of Hitler. He was a villain in the 40s in the comics. So, I mean, there's...
I understand all that. I know he's been around for forever. But I guess my question is, was there a lot of explanation of him as a child? Backstory to how he became Red Skull?
Over the years, any number of writers have gone back and told stories of the past of Red Skull and how he came to be and who he was and the different things he did for the Nazis and the communists and all that kind of stuff throughout his history. And, you know, every so often they have to revise the history in order to make it make sense to the current generation of readers. You know, Marvel has that tendency to just kind of revise their history as they go along to make people a little more current. And he's one of those characters that you still have to have that route going back to the original, you know, World War II stories, you know, otherwise he doesn't really quite work out that well. It's kind of hard to, he's a Vietnam era war atrocities general or something. Like, it just doesn't work the same as just making him a flat out Nazi, you know? So, first of all, you not knowing a whole lot about the character and his background and everything, what did you find out about him in this series that made him such an interesting character?
What demented him into the Nazi party, or the SS, excuse me. What demented him into the SS? What pushed him over the edge? Those are some of the questions that I never thought I'd want answers to. You know, Red Skull is not a character that's been foremost on my mind as far as super villains, you know, at least not recently in my short, you know, few years of being an avid comic book reader. I thought that Pat did a great job of tying in historical fact with a great storyline behind a child who's living in a tormented time where Germany is on the brink of, communism or fascism. I mean, if you really want to break it down. Extreme poverty. So he's subject to all of this, and he's, you know, torn between survival and his own, moral, whatever's left of his morality, so to speak. How do you pronounce the artist name? Kolick? How do you say that? You know?
I don't have a clue.
Okay. We'll say Kolick. I hope I'm not butchering it. The art style reminds me, especially the covers, it reminds me of period.
Propaganda
art.
It's reminiscent of a 40s propaganda art that would be used for drafting soldiers or delivering message. It definitely resonated that way with me because I read all five issues as well, and I have to concur, the apocalypse. I definitely felt the socioeconomic, I felt that they knew that they'd done some research on Germany in the 30s and 40s. They definitely got to inflation issues correct, right. And they got the formation of the Nazi party, that it was one of many parties,
right,
that they were bullied. I thought that was really pretty apt. I thought, I mean, it definitely made it feel realistic historically.
Well, they made it, or what is Red Skull's name in this? It's like Johan or something like that, right?
Johan Schmidt. Johan. Here, hold on one second. I got it sitting right here. Johan Schmidt. Yeah.
Okay. Well, they made it so like the evolution of Johan's moral development, no matter how twisted it is, tied into the same progression of what was going on in Nazi Germany, at least the dawn of Nazi Germany. So, I really can't say any differently than that. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. But what's great is the content of the story, the writing style of Pack. Brings out this, like, you see the moral breakdown of Johan real quick. How much are we going to do as far as, like, spoilers on this?
Well, I mean, the series is over, so I figure just go ahead and people who are going to pick this up are going to be probably people picking up the trade anyway, so they're going to get a fair amount of spoilers to picking up from other people's conversations and whatnot, so.
Well, the turning point, I guess, is not only, you know, the loss of his family, but when he sees this puppy that he's, like, holding on to try to, like, hold on. It's kind of like the last bit of his morality gets thrown into that cage with the other dogs, and the dogs just, like, tear it to pieces. And then you see the red in his eyes, and he just snaps.
I guess that was one of the things I thought was kind of like, with a parental advisory, you would think that you're looking for an adult crowd. To have to kill a puppy, I thought that was, like, too obvious. I don't know. I read that, and I was like, well, that's pretty much going to hit the point pretty hard. But I was like, it was also kind of a little cliche to me, that particular, the whole death of the puppy thing. I was like, kind of.
Well, I think they had to show some sort of, like.
Something that people could relate to. But still, like, everybody says, you know, when you're upset, it's like, oh, it's like somebody hit my puppy. And then they come in the first comic is about him. His first act as Red Skull is to strangle or murder some
cage. No, I disagree because he walks in that cage. You see the red in his eyes, and he takes that like stick, that bat like stick, and what it is it symbolizes like this extreme sense that I think carries throughout all five issues of his character, where it's like he has this turning point where he snaps. There is something where he's like, that's the line. You know, in his twisted mind, he's like, that's the line. I'm snapping. And you see it three or four times throughout the five issues. He kills several people. I mean, and most of the people he kills are people that have put hands on him. And I think that's what he felt when he saw the puppy get attacked, was he felt like there needs to be revenge.
Okay, you know? So is this being five issues, is he like young until issue 3 and then he grows up and becomes the Red Skull? Does he turn the Red Skull early on and then does flashbacks? How is the story set up?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it seemed to me like it was with each episode, it seemed like he was getting worse and worse. And so to me, at the end of the issue, he was capable of being the Red Skull. Of course, he doesn't become the Red Skull until
the very end.
Until the very end. But you could see him moving in degrees. Maybe he was always there. I don't know.
Well,
maybe that's what they're trying to say.
I think his soul died after the first issue. And then the rest was just the development of how twisted
how bad he was going to go.
Yeah.
Or how low he was going to go.
Right.
And that's what I mean. It's like he could have been a normal SS psychopath.
No, he's more than that.
But I think he became more than that, and they showed that in gradual changes throughout the issue. So I think to become the Red Skull, the quintessential Nazi, he had to go through all five issues before he became that.
Right.
Other than that, he was just...
But I mean, okay, so in issue 5 is the actual transformation to the Red Skull?
Well, I think actually in issue 4, it's... Well, at the end of issue 3, he's, you know, going Heil Hitler, and he's wearing a Nazi uniform.
Okay,
you know?
But at what point does he get a freaking red head that looks like a skeleton?
That does not happen.
That's why I say. I don't think he becomes the Red Skull. I think he's capable of it. He becomes capable of it by issue 5. He's that evil. But he's not Red Skull until he has a Red Skull, in my opinion. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. No, it's the development into becoming the Red Skull but it's not. You do not see the Red Skull at the end. No, not at all.
So this this is all technically pre Red Skull then, his ascension.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, for you readers out there, bear in mind that this is a backstory of a very young Red Skull. Before Red Skull is even Red Skull, many years before he makes that transformation. So let it be known, and it fools you because you see all these great covers of Red Skull on the front, and you're like, oh, I can't. Each issue, I was getting a little bit in my mind. I was kind of waiting for, the Red Skull to show up, But you don't. All you see is this like, twisted, red-headed little kid with his, red eyes when he gets, super angry and he knew something terrible was going to happen. And that's just the development of his twistedness, too.
So did it ever feel kind of like a letdown that you don't actually get to see the character of the Red Skull in the series at all?
No, not
what the story's about.
No, because
there's a whole different point to that comic series.
Yeah, you become. I was like I was engulfed into the character pretty quickly on. Like, I was captured, and the five issues fly by really quickly, don't they? I mean, it's a quick read. I mean, you could probably, I read all comics, all five on Comixology on my tablet, and it just went boom, like that. No big deal at all. So I mean, overall, I'm having trouble saying anything negative about it. I like the artwork. I like the style of how they presented Johann's character, and you can see the evil in his face as it progresses in all five issues. Like, he's never actually innocent-faced looking, I don't think. I think in the first issue, you can tell he's definitely still got a little bit of unkept baby face, but you know that he's going to turn, obviously, because it's Red Skull. I liked the way they showed his twisted progression in the second and third issue when he befriends the Jewish family and turns on them, basically. There's a lot of, really disturbing moral decisions that he makes where you're just like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. There was the Nazi commander or whatever that was, he was basically, in charge of, this Hitler youth group. And, Johann was a part of it. And then he struck him. And then later on, when Johann had a chance to get him alone, he stabs him in the heart with a knife. He's basically like, nobody touches me.
If he's the protagonist of the story, who's the antagonist of the story? Because I'm assuming there's not Captain America running around in this book throwing his shield the actual Skull.
I think the protagonist is the history and the times. I mean, he's a survivalist. He gets wrapped up in something that's
way bigger than him.
Of course, he seems to, I don't want to say thrive, because that would mean that he's getting bigger or better. He just, in a negative way, he thrives in that situation. He feeds off of the mess that the world's in.
Can I comment on something? Because this is the first time the Huckster had a chance to check out this tablet. Did you notice that you can go frame by frame?
Yeah.
Try that out?
Yeah, I did see that.
We've been talking about comics.
But I don't read comics like that, so I don't read frame by frame. I go page by page.
Right. No, we've been talking about Comixology on the show, and I was just wondering if you noticed how quickly you can fly through a comic book like this. I'm sorry, I'm getting off subject.
Well, no, I think that's actually kind of an important part of reviewing this book, because he did send us the book digitally to read on Comixology. So that does play into a little bit. And we've talked before about how we both kind of enjoy Comixology in some ways more than we enjoy actual paper copies of certain books. So go ahead.
Sorry about that.
What's going on over there? Did you, a bunch of dogs come in or something?
Yeah, you can hear their nails on the
ceiling
above me. Good grief. Sorry about that, folks. Patrick Blair. That's what makes this show so human.
Or canine,
yes.
So did the book feel like authentic World War II era? I mean, did anything stand out as being out of place or anything?
Like there's like a couple of picturesque of like the classic Hitler with Goebbels next to him, like overseeing like a sea of Nazis. There's also some scenes, some like where basically I think some kids are released from Dachau or something like that. I mean, it's like it takes like this heart-wrenching time of Germany and throws, you know, this whole storyline of, you know, Johann who turns into Red Skull in the mix. I mean, it's a great story. I think that anybody that buys this trade or go find the individual issues, it's worth reading. I mean, it's a great story.
I mean, to me, except for the covers of the Red Skull, which I thought were amazing. I thought the covers were actually some of the best artwork I've seen from comic books. I thought, aside from the actual depiction of Red Skull on the cover, this could have been any really degenerate SS soldier, like the creation of some really diabolical SS soldier.
Like, yeah, just
it
like,
didn't have to be Red Skull, except that it was Red Skull on the front, and that was the whole point.
Right.
Like, it could have been a historical novel, a comic novel.
Now, how did you feel, like, did it feel like he could have been a normal boy if all of this stuff wasn't going on?
No. This is like one of the, and it's funny because Huckster and I were just talking about, you know, he's a substitute teacher and he's got some kids that are on meds. And, you know, it's like, you can see really early on when you know that kids are kind of just, that's just the way they are. You know, so to speak, I think he's got the same kind of thing here, you know, where...
Well, that's what I was saying earlier when I said he became the Red Skull because of the situation he's in, but I'm not convinced that he wouldn't have been... he would have been something else if it hadn't been for World War II in the time. But I think he would have been just as bad.
Does this book...
I think he was capable from the beginning.
Does this book in any way deal with any of the more kind of fantastic elements of the Marvel Universe, or is this completely World War II book?
Forget anything you... I mean, there's no superheroes in this. There's no supervillains. I mean, it's... It's very much like stuck in its historical context of the time.
You know what's even crazy? I thought they were going to get into mentioning the occult, because that's what Red Skull was originally into with Hydra and everything. But they didn't even mention any occult. Zero. Nothing. And I thought they'd for sure he'd have a book or he'd have an experience that would get him interested at a young age. But according to this prequel, he isn't even interested in the occult at all.
He's interested in survival. That's all it comes down to, you know. And it's funny, like
they get back at those who wrong him.
Well, and it's almost like it's like you feel like he decided at some point early on in his childhood that it's better to be the snake than the puppy. You know,
I believe that's what they teach you in boot camp.
Yeah, that's right. You know, do you want to be a snake or do you want to be a puppy? But you know, you get that feeling where it's like he's like, okay, I'm going to be a predator. You know, that's how I'm going to survive. And, you know, I'll tell you what, I think that Marvel took a stretch by doing this story just because it has nothing to do with the Marvel Universe if you take it by itself. You know what I'm saying? It really is just a story about a kid who, you could tell, just morally just loses it, you know, and turns and becomes a Nazi.
I have to admit, when I saw the story, I thought you were supposed to sympathize with him in some way. But even despite the horrible circumstances in him, at no point did I sympathize with the character.
No, I was just kind of waiting to see what he'd do.
Like, he was, yeah, exactly. He was like a train wreck. You were just waiting to see how bad he would get.
Well, that's kind of what
there was
that's kind of what I was wondering about when I asked if you ever felt like he could have grown into a normal person. I mean, is he just this embodiment of evil, and it just so happened that, you know, the whole World War II and the Nazis and everything just allowed him, you know, to mature into that, as opposed to, say, he had grown up in Idaho in the 1960s, would have he just become, you know, the Boston Strangler or something? You know, is it, would he just have been a regular serial killer instead of being this great Nazi murderer?
Well, I think any inkling of moral redemption ended pretty quickly in the first issue. You know,
yeah, it could have been anything that triggered that. I mean, who knows? Was it a win? And it's not clear if it was just always there, that evil inside of
him.
You're not clear about that at all.
It's pretty clear, though.
As it progresses, you can see that it's there.
Well, it's pretty clear there's no turning back for this kid.
Yeah, oh yeah.
There's no redemption.
Yeah.
The Red Skull's not going to, like, you know, he's not going to grow up in the Red Skull and then be like, oh, I have some goodness left in me.
No. No,
he's not going to have that Darth Vader moment where he saves his son.
No, he's not going to, like, you know, push the Emperor off, you know, throw the Emperor off a bridge. I mean, you know, what I really liked about the story is you get this, like, feeling of survival from him and the extent that he'll go to survive. You know, it's not so much he's fighting for the cause. He's fighting for survival.
So kind of like Shane on The Walking Dead this season.
Yeah, well, it's like he just picks a side.
Yeah, but even Shane doesn't go out his way to murder people for pushing him.
I don't know if the Shane tie-in really works here, but...
Yeah, because he's not that bad. It's not like... Because there are points where he murders horrifically just because of a slight to him. It had nothing to do with survival, although that's how it starts.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's a good assumption.
But he definitely, by the end of the comic,
by the end, he's
comic
killed.
Book five, he's murdering people because he's...
Right, to gain.
Yeah, because
to gain.
Because he wants to.
Right, it's like you see early on in the first and second issue, he picks a side. Like, he could have gone either way. He could have gone to the Communist Party and done the same thing, you know?
Right.
But I think he picked the popular side. He picked the side that he knew he could survive with.
So here's a question for you. Did he pick that side because that's what he wanted to do, or was it because of circumstances?
I think it was circumstances.
Yeah, I think
that's kind of what they were kind of laying out.
So in his heart, he's really an evil communist, but because of his circumstances, all he could be was an evil Nazi?
No, I'm not saying his heart was into anything. I'm saying that everything that he did, he was doing it as leverage. You know, like, he just made judgment decisions as far as, you know, I don't think it had anything to do with morality or social, political decision.
I thought maybe he went towards whatever group enabled him to be.
Right, to be what he was.
To be what he was.
Like, yeah, exactly. There's a point there when he's, like, standing in line with all the other Hitler youth, and they're all singing these, like, anti-Jew songs, and he's not singing. And the commander dude, the same guy, pointed out that he stabs in the heart later. He's like, you know, why aren't you singing? He's like, well... You know, all I can think, you know, I don't remember exactly the right quote, but he's like, you know, I don't have a knife. You know, I want to sing about knives. You know what I'm saying? He's like, you know, I want to sing about killing. You know, I mean, like, and I think he pointed out a couple times in the issues where, like, you know, he just wants to kill. You know,
like, I don't think it mattered. I mean, he became the quintessential Nazi because that's what they needed.
Right, and he, like, talked to the SS, and he's like, well, you guys have guns. I want to be in the SS. You know? I mean, like... There were some hints there throughout the five issues where it was like, you know, he was definitely pointing out, you know, I just want to go where I can feed my
rage.
Yeah, my
whatever.
So he's just a psychopath.
What's going on?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
now,
all right, so let me ask you one final question before we wrap things up here. Since, you know, we spoke a little bit about how you weren't all that familiar with the character for you. Having just come in, you know, 2.5-3 years ago, whatever, starting to read comics, for you, Norman Osborn was the big villain that you were dealing with in a lot of the stuff you were reading early on. Magneto, you've seen a little bit of, but, you know, he hasn't really factored into a lot of stuff that you read as much. Where do you see the Red Skull on a villain scale of how evil and diabolical and how much of a threat he is compared to some of those other characters that you are more familiar with?
Oh, he's one of those killers that, like, he's calculated. He's a calculated killer whereas I think the other supervillains are more killing out of necessity. Does that make any sense? So I think in that category of villain, the Red Skull is a force to be reckoned with.
He's much more of a psychopath.
Yeah, he definitely comes across as the quintessential psychopath. But he also, I mean, definitely, I got the feeling that if he had gotten any superpowers like Magneto, that would have been some serious trouble. Like, you definitely get the impression that, while not as powerful as some of the more, well, you know, other well-known bad guys, that, I mean, that thankfully for the universe.
The Marvel universe.
Yeah, that he didn't get, like, yeah. Magneto's powers.
Well, he does have some super strength, and if I'm not...
Well, he gets that later, but yeah. As far as the scale of superpowers go, he's kind of on the low end. And
thankfully.
Thankfully, because he'd take the world down.
Yeah.
Because it suited him.
So, I mean, if you put him in that category, I'd say, yeah, he's definitely at the top of the list.
Top of the list, evil-wise,
and actually,
power-wise.
Because of this, I'm definitely intrigued into maybe reading some more of the previous comics of Red Skull.
Yeah, me too. I'd definitely like to go back to some of the... I want to see what
the early stuff.
Cause I want to see. Also want to see the kind of the propaganda, the artwork, and see to see where they got the art for the covers, because they were so interesting.
Alrighty. Well, that's going to do it for today. Wrap things up here, guys. Thanks for joining me on this special edition of Comaholics Light, I guess we'll call it. We'll try to do some more of these in the future. Just quick little discussions as we kill time in between bigger Comaholics episodes. But shout out again to Greg Pack. Thanks for sending the issue our way to do this review. And also, folks, don't forget that if you have any comments, you can feel free to join the forums at popculturenetwork.com or just stop by ineedcomics.com. You can comment, if you're listening to this podcast on iTunes or something like that, you can come by ineedcomics.com and you can just, add a comment to where the story is actually posted. Or if you'd like, you can send us a voicemail message. Phone number is 217-953-4022. Or you can send emails to apocalypse@ineedcomics.com or dirt@ineedcomics.com. And Hux doesn't have a email address with us because he's just in the studio audience. But hey, maybe sometime in the future. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks, guys, over at Comaholics HQ. Thanks for doing this with me today. And we'll talk to all you guys next time.
Good night. I'll be to say it.
Good
night. Alrighty.